welcome to another fabulous episode of All the Vegas, the definitive Vegas entertainment podcast presented by Las Vegas Weekly Magazine. All the Vegas is coming to you from just off the world famous Las Vegas Strip at the Space, home of Monday's Dark. I am Brock Radke. My co-host is Mark Chinook. Mark, don't be shy. Say hello.
Hello, everybody.
So timid, this guy.
It takes me a minute. You got to loosen me up.
Mark, have you been collecting your commemorative Vegas Golden Knights editions of Las Vegas Weekly?
I have a box that my wife is ready to throw out the back window because every day I seem to be adding something into it. It's been an incredible first season, and now that it's officially over, we have the NHL Awards. I can put a lid on that box. But yes, all of the commemorative things are in there. Pucks, hats, shirts, weeklies, hardbound books, tears, frozen ice now in water.
Tears. the most recent issue of Las Vegas Weekly is a very beautiful, shiny gold edition, and it's kind of recaps the whole season and all that stuff. So, shout out to Weekly. There you go, Las Vegas Weekly. You're welcome.
The greatest paper of all time.
Our guest today on All of Vegas performs one of the most memorable, the most dangerous, the most sexy, the most thrilling acts, I'm going to say, in the history of the Las Vegas Strip. And that sounds hyperbolic, yes. But if you have seen him do his thing at Cirque du Soleil's Humanity at the New York Hotel and Casino, then you know what I'm talking about. Brandon Pareda, thank you so much for being with us today.
Wow, thank you. That's quite the introduction to live up to now.
You should be your agent.
I spend a lot of time on my intros, and then I just kind of, it all peters out from there. Well, so that was it. That was as good. Yeah,
thanks for coming. The show's over.
Thanks, Brandon, for joining us. You are a born and raised Las Vegas native. Have you met, this is not something that I have seen very much of, have you met other performers and shows on the Strip who are natives?
When I first started, I think I was the only one. And then I think there's maybe a couple now, but it's not like I grew up with them or knew them. But yeah, it's very rare still. Even in day-to-day life outside of Cirque, like to meet another Vegas native. I think once you grow up, you're kind of like, all right, let's get out of here.
That's how I felt. I grew up here from the age of 10, and as a kid and as a teenager, I thought Vegas was pretty boring, and I wanted out as fast as I could get out. Did you have a kind of a similar experience growing up?
I did. Yeah, I wanted to get to California, go to school in California or Reno, just because I had a scholarship, so it was just go anywhere, and then I ended up just staying here.
Where's your family from originally, and what brought them to Vegas?
So my grandmother came over from Germany when she was about 18 years old on a boat to Canada, and then was there for a couple years, and I started a family up there with my grandfather and four kids, and then everybody moved down. My mom was about 3 years old, and my mom grew up here. Everybody grew up here. I think my mom's the only one still from the family that's still here. Everybody else moved up to like Oregon and a little bit more back up to the colder weather. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but she still is here.
So when did you start going down the road of getting into entertainment and performing?
Ooh, okay. So I started doing soccer. Soccer was actually one of my favorite things to do, soccer and karate, the sports. And then in fifth grade, there was an audition for choir. So I was like, okay, my mom was kind of wanted to push me into that. So I tried everything almost, made it fifth grade. I did fifth grade choir. Then all of middle school, I was in choir and did concert choirs, honor choir, show choir, and then inevitably went into doing it my 1 year that I was at Palo Verde for Vocal Infinity there. and then had to move over to a different school, Centennial, and that's when I was like, all right, I'm done. I'm not singing anymore. I'm not going to be like, keep, you know, going this route and then having to like break up groups that are competing against each other. But I was also doing gymnastics as well, on my time off on the weekends, and started coaching it when I was 15 as well, and then got into cheerleading for Centennial. That's actually what ended up snagging me up, was that, and then I ended up doing school cheer and a competitive all-star team, and did that for UNLV, did the co-ed UNLV cheer team for a semester, because I only went to UNLV for one semester, and at that time I was learning acrobatic aerial as well. Mm-hmm. So I was always throwing myself into different stuff. And the thing that stuck the most was doing the aerial acrobatics.
No singing anymore? You never sing?
Nope, I don't. I mean, maybe in the shower, in the truck.
No, we're bringing them to Monday's Dark. Now that I know that, you're getting on the Monday's Dark
I don't
dark
even know
stage.
Where my vocal range is anymore.
Well, you got a few weeks to get it.
Yeah, right.
That's it.
So, went to UNLV for a little bit, but then you got on stage, right? You joined
Chippendales.
Yes.
That's actually why I dropped out of school. That was a real good, you know, hey, Mom, so I'm going to be quitting my biology major at UNLV because I just joined Chippendales. So, yeah, at 18, I joined Chippendales, and I was doing aerial at the time. And the producer, David Caldwell, wanted to make it a little bit different than what Chippendales had been for so many years. He wanted to add that little extra Vegas vibe to it with the acrobatics that Cirque was already bringing to Vegas. And Chippendales had only been in town for a year. So they were trying to find, you know, new ways to make the show different. So it was a test, a trial. Myself and another aerialist did a tissue act in the show, and then eventually, a couple years later, I created a hoop act, an aerial hoop act for the show, and that became another staple of the show. So it went from a tester to like I was there for 5 years, wow. And they didn't want me to leave.
What's a tissue act?
Aerial explain that.
Just wipe away tears of the women.
Yeah, exactly. it's just a big, long piece of fabric that either is lifted by a motor or it's suspended from the ceiling. And then you climb up it and you're doing all these tricks and rolls.
Tissue.
Yeah.
Tissue. I know the
just a different aerial apparatus, basically.
Yeah. But that was my first apparatus that I trained on.
I thought it was, you know, tears of joy as the women weep.
I'm sure it was that as well.
That as well. Yeah.
Come here and let me console you with a piece of tissue.
They always would be like, oh, they look so soft and so nice. I just want to put them in between my legs and all over my body with you. And I'm like, you'd be surprised how painful they are.
Mark, you don't know this because you are from Canada, but when you grow up as a boy in Las Vegas, you go to college or you join Chippendales.
That's it. Yeah. It's choice A or choice B.
That's how it is.
Red pill, blue pill.
That's one of Vegas' great secrets that people don't realize.
I don't even get the offer for Chippendales. They're like, yo, bro, put the clothes back on.
You, like me, you would have been a scholar.
Chunkendales. Chunkendales. It's a new show. Off the strip.
Brandon, how did you first... So did that hoop act... Was that hoop act that you created for Chippendales kind of the first version or the genesis of your... Humanity Act, or
in
was
a way,
just kind of a starting point?
Yes and no. I had created a lot of different pieces for corporate events and private parties in Vegas. Back then, like MGM Entertainment was doing so much like parties, and they corporate was big back then to bring in parties and have dancers and shows, and so I was getting used like. Every week to do a corporate event, or I'd be flown out. So I was constantly creating brand new stuff on different apparatuses. But that act made its way to Cirque, and they saw it. They started hearing a lot about me because I was here in Vegas and aerialist on the strip. So they're the ones that actually reached out and contacted me. I had wanted to be in Cirque. I thought that I was still like in the young years of even getting there. So I was like, I need to do this. I need to do that. I need to train. I need to constantly. And they were the ones that ended up coming to me and saying, hey, we've heard a lot about you. We really want you to come and audition for us as your a soloist.
How old were you when you first auditioned for Cirque?
I was 22, yeah.
And you are, I mean, you're a self-trained aerialist. Is that unusual in that world? I always think of Cirque stuff, you know, the performances are so specific. I always think of, like, this is like an athlete or mm-hmm. a gymnast or something that got into the Cirque program and trained and right. learned to do these very special skills.
So back then, in 2000 is probably when I started, circus arts was primarily circus family. So everything was taught, you know, to you taught your kids, and it was generation by generation, all those skills, all those, and then those traveling circuses would, you know, create new acts together. They were always training together. Then I think it started to become more popular in mainstream, like for corporate events and stuff like that in Vegas. It started to become popular. There are only a very few acrobats or aerialists that did corporate events, and most of them were girls, and they had their own style. And then there were guys, and they had their own style. So I was men were usually very strong and then did all this like roll-ups on the tissue or very strength positions. And then the girls were all about the flexibility and the finesse of it. When I started, I was a gymnast, so I was extremely flexible. I was still very young, so I was not looking like I was this built, stacked man. So I was like, you know what, I'm gonna take all of my technique that I have in gymnastics and try and transfer it over. So I kind of created my own style with merging the flexibility and the strength into one, and also the sensual side of it, I guess you would say. And back then, too, we didn't really have Instagram and all these social media like platforms that people can post all these different amazing things that people now learn so much. Remember, we had YouTube, but very limited stuff. So for a lot of my research, like I went to, when I was 18, I went to go see Zumanity, and Zumanity was my first show, live show that I went and saw. And it gave me that feel of like, oh, okay, you know, this is what it looks like in real life. So yeah, I was self-taught. I coached at the gymnastics gym, and I had the keys. And after classes were done, I would pull down the rings off the pulley system, hang up my tissue, put it up, and spend a good 2 hours just getting stuck in knots and burns and come up with, you know, different tricks on my own. And slowly over the years would find other people that were working in other events with me, and we would kind of gather a little group together, and we'd go and train for a couple hours and just share back and forth. But that was how that's how I learned and how I trained back then. Mm-hmm.
Was your first connection with Cirque, and well, you know, once you had your tryout and they brought you on and stuff, was that anything resembling what your act is like today, or did you start out in a different capacity? Or
so Cirque called me. I was pumping my gas at a gas station, and it was Krista Monson, head of casting. And she goes, hi, this is Krista Monson from Cirque du Soleil. We've heard a lot about you. We know that you're an acrobat in Las Vegas. I go, okay, who is this? I thought it was a joke. And she goes, no, this is Cirque du Soleil calling. I was like, oh. So I was a little bit thrown off. So she invited me to a solo and act audition. So it was not just an open call. It was invite only. And it was at the Mystère Theater. And they wanted me to prepare a piece or give the piece that I had from Chippendales. So I brought my piece, my On the Hoop at Chippendales, did it, and made it through the whole audition. And with Cirque, how they do is they do different rounds of cuts, or they did back then. And then at the end, they either place you into a show that they have a position that's available, and then they start talking to you first about what your availability is. And they asked me what show I wanted to be in. I said, well, I'm in Chippendales right now, and I enjoy the sensual movement, and Zumanity was my first show. Zumanity would be my all-time favorite. And I also knew that Zumanity was all based around solos and duos, so I would have more of, you know, a platform to be able to present something on my own. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, we don't have anything available right now at Zumanity, but here's a piece of paper saying you've completed the audition, made it all the way through, and it's almost like a congratulations, we'll let you know if something comes up. So a couple months later, they called me and said, we have a position available. It's a dance position. I said, Krista, you know that I'm not a dancer, even though I was at Chippendales. I'm not a trained technical Cirque du Soleil dancer. She goes, no, I know, but we're going to get you in. At least it'll get you into, you know, into the show, and then we will, how it works is contracts become available, and then we can move you in that direction. Awesome. So I did the two-man act, the fight scene, for about a year, and they brought me in for a new contract. They said, okay, we have the biker boy character is available, and we'd like you to be to create an aerial act for the show as a backup act. And I was like, whoa, that's not something that Cirque really does often. They don't mm-hmm. really go, hey, we want you to create something for us. And they wanted it to be different, unique, and brand new. So they didn't want it to be a hoop. I did chains as well, but it was more common apparatus. Well, not common. Back then, very few people did it, but it was a little bit too similar to one of the other acts in the show, so it looked like straps. Mm-hmm. So they're like, just go and create something. I was like, ooh, the pressure. So I went on a piece of paper, started drawing things out. I was like, how do I make this work? So I kind of I designed the apparatus that you see in the show. Took it to one of my really good friends, Armando Farfan, who makes a lot of apparatuses here in town for corporate events. For back then, it was Studio 54. Does a lot of the huge celebrities like Katy Perry, Cher, all of her stuff that she flies off. That's Armando. So he made my apparatus for me, started training it, and that was then the new part was, okay, how do I create an act on an apparatus that I dreamt up in my head? That usually when you're an aerialist or an acrobat, you know what you're going to do, or you kind of know what you're going to be able to do on an apparatus. This was all research and development because the apparatus moved so differently than anything else. Mm-hmm. And it was finding those bruises again and getting torn up and eaten. And with my act at Zoo, I've always been given music to create off of, be inspired off of. And they were like, no, we want you to create the act and then we'll build the music around you, around your act. So as an artist, it was a little bit tough for me to kind of flip it and create the act and then hear the music. So I started in January of 2009 and premiered the act 2 days after my birthday, August 1st, I believe, or it was like July 31st that year. So it took a good 7 months to put that act together. And with Cirque, it's all about making sure the music is right, making sure that your costume, because everything's handmade up in Montreal. So it was a long process, where in the past I could be like, all right, I just need a week, I'll put together something, give me the music, bam, done. This was a much more intense process. And I also wanted to make sure that it was going to be presentable for Cirque du Soleil, Cirque du Soleil's stage. Mm-hmm. You know, this was my dream, so I was like, I can't mess this up.
Well, you definitely didn't mess it up. What was it like after the first one, when you got off stage going, whoop?
I honestly don't even remember that first performance. I have it on video, and just watching it is just like, it's... the act has evolved so much over the past 10 years. Just comfortability, and then also moving it around in different pieces. Like, we rearranged the music, I think, twice, and then moved the tricks around a couple times. So watching it then, even for me, is like, oh my God, that's a whole different act. But it's, I don't even remember that first feeling. I know I was so nervous, but I think I was more just wanted to perform it because I was so used to creating stuff and performing it very quickly and getting it over with. Yeah. And then this was like this huge buildup of like a good like a year process from getting the offer of the contract to getting the apparatus made, everything getting checked out because everything, you know, had to be checked out and going through the training process of it. Yeah, so it was, I think it was just more of like, yes, finally did my first show.
How many years now in the show?
I've been in the show for 10 years.
When did you celebrate 10?
10 would have been March 28th.
Yes. That's huge.
Yeah, March 28th, 10 years.
Now, when's the leather jacket come from Cirque du Soleil? Because that's a big deal,
that's
right?
That's a big deal. Is the that leather five? Jacket is a big deal. Leather jacket's at 5 years and at the time. But
did you get a Rolex at 10? What, like, come
I,
on.
No, I would... It changed. Okay, so the whole like, acknowledgement program, like, changed probably about 2 or 3 years ago. So luckily, I was still one of the ones that got the leather jacket. I know, right? That leather jacket. And it was something that got brought up so many times.
Did you know about the leather jacket?
I did not.
See, so I as a Canadian, you know, Cirque du Soleil is a part of our culture. We're mm-hmm. proud of it.
Always we love playing that the Canadian it's, card.
A big part of Las Vegas and the landscape. And it transformed entertainment, you know, for entertainers. And I was always, you know, as a young kid, when we'd see the shows, I'd be like, oh, there's a leather jacket. That means that person's been here a long time. Yeah. Or they're a, you know, a veteran of Cirque du Soleil. And Cirque isn't that old in Las Vegas. So when you see these leather jackets kicking around, they're black leather jackets with the bright yellow logo on the back. That's a veteran right there.
You know, if you see one with a jean jacket, if you see a jean jacket, you know they've been in the company since the beginning.
See, they upgraded to leather at some point. Yeah, they're like, oh, we can spend a few more dollars. Let's get some leather.
Yeah. So my tenure, I got a, well, it's still being processed and still coming down, but it's a big leather
like double
luggage, duffel bag. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, so they kind of changed it around a little bit. Now we have a couple different options, but they did take that five-year jacket away. And then there was much complaining that it finally came back. It did come back. Yeah. So everybody's like, yes, we got that 5 year. Everybody looks for that 5 year jacket. They do.
See, now you know, Brock. When you're at a restaurant in the fall and there's a black leather Cirque jacket on, veteran.
Yeah, it used to be suede, which is your 10. A suede.
I like the handbag idea, though, like the overnighter. That's a good call.
What's the, after doing this act for so many years now, what is the feeling like now when you go on stage? Is there still a lot of adrenaline and excitement for you? I mean, it's obviously a very exhilarating act for everybody else. You're flying very high in the air, and it feels very dangerous. What's it like for you to prepare and to take the stage every night?
For me, when I was... So the act started out as a backup act, so it would go in randomly, and I would literally have to prepare mentally the day. The whole day. It was best that I knew that I was doing it that day. Now, it's still something that I prepare for a couple hours before, just mentally. And I get nervous still every single performance because I drop in from the grid. And I have those nerves of every performer has. But once I start to drop in, it's almost like this... second persona kicks in, and it's just like this rock star inside me just comes out, and I'm like, okay, here we go, and then it's over before I even remember. It's like being shot out of a cannon. That act is so fast, and I'm spinning so much, and the energy that the crowd is giving me, let alone the music itself, it's very intense rock, guitar and drums heavy, and it's 5 minutes. And it seems like it's done in 40 seconds. There's sometimes in the act where I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm already here at the in my last trick. And they did, it's still so intense to me every single time. And then when I get out, through the basement. I'm every night, no matter how much, I'm sweating and I'm breathing extremely heavy, and I just need to sit down for, you know, I kind of like pull myself back together. It takes me a good 5-10 minutes to pull myself back together while I'm taking off my gloves and my boots. But it's still every night. It's not something that you can just go on and be like, okay, did it. Yeah, it's intense.
I've been a part of some long running shows as well, and I same right there with you. I'm nervous. You know, you're genuinely ready to perform, and there's those butterflies, mm-hmm. we call them, or whatever, and you get out on stage and you start going. One thing that I've always wanted to ask a Cirque performer, and now that you're sitting here, I get to do it. There is an element of just danger involved in what you do. Like, if I go out and I'm doing a Broadway show, the worst thing that could happen for me is I screw up my lines. But then I improv and make shit up, and it's what it is. There's always an element that you might go out there and die. And I hate saying that, but, like, you guys put your life on the line in your performance. And to me, that is one of the greatest things about going to see Cirque performances. Is that ever there with you? Or at this point now, you've been doing it so long that you're like, hey, I trust my team. I know I have the best in the business with me, and we're good to go. Or is there a little, like, because even when I fly, I hate to fly, but I fly all the time. It's inevitable. I'm going to sit in this seat when I get on a plane and do up my seatbelt going, man, I hope the plane doesn't crash. And I'm not meaning this in a disrespectful way, but is that part of in your subconscious there a little bit or no?
I think so. I think with any line of work, and there's more line of work that have more risks, yeah. and more danger aspects to it. Yes, there's a different level of risk that goes along with being a dancer as opposed to being an acrobat.
Yeah.
We train so much to make sure that, you know, the possibility of anything is slim
to none.
And then also, it's a show. So there is that perceived risk that the audience is going to have, mm-hmm. as opposed to what we feel and what we uh-huh. know with our team. I trust my team so much, and my riggers and my stage managers, and also myself. And there, again, it's always there. It's, you know, when you get into a car, there's always that risk. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's there. But I train, again, I train so much that, and I've been doing it for, I've been doing aerial acrobatics now for 18 years. So
it's so beautiful to watch. And I think, like, it's so amazing that point you just made about it. It is a show. And it is designed so that the audience does exactly. feel that. That's a great point. And, you know, I never really processed that personally. But, like, it's so amazing to watch. And you do feel like, oh, my God. And I think that's why people go. And have continued to go for decades. You know, yeah. So.
I think that's one of the great things about Zoomanity, too, is that, you know, it's the sensual show in Cirque's Las Vegas portfolio. So if you've never seen it before, you're expecting a lot of that, a lot of really gorgeous people and dance, and there's so many different dimensions to that show. It does feel dangerous. It is thrilling. It is hilarious. There's just so much going on.
It's my favorite Cirque show for that reason. I think each act, as you alluded to earlier, there's a lot of solos, there's a lot of duos. Each one is so specific and unique that you wish the show were longer, but you leave fully satisfied that you've seen so many amazing acts, and not that one is better than the other. They're just so unique that when one ends, you're just like, oh, and then your emotions get taken in a completely different direction because there's something so beautiful and unique that comes right behind it. Like that fishbowl act,
yeah,
you know, is amazing. Those two women are stunning, and what they do in that thing is crazy. Yeah. And then, you know, somebody else comes out, and the comedy is there, and You come out and you're just like, oh my God, I'm biting off all my nails. It's an awesome show.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the responses that I get from the show is, I didn't realize that I would have so much fun and that it was going to be that funny, like the comedy in it as well. It's not just, you know, a sex show, you know, that people perceive it to be. But it's very well-rounded with the acrobatics, with the dancing, with the comedy, and so that you're tying in the sensual and sexuality, things that for, you know, every day can be taboo, but we kind of like make it feel a little bit more comfortable to talk about, you know. So that, I think, is, again, it's very well-rounded. It's a very well-rounded
show. The clowns in the show are...
Yeah.
Some of the best. Mickey and Shannon. Yeah, they're some of the best in Cirque du Soleil's catalog. I don't care what anybody says. Like, they are on it. And there's nothing that the audience can throw at them that they don't have an answer for right away. And it's just, it's such a great package. The whole package over there is amazing.
In terms of your own personal, like, physical preparation for the show, like, has your training regimen changed a lot over the years? Are you doing like these incredibly specific things so that you can stay in aerialist shape, whatever that is? Or
I think over the years I've learned what works and what doesn't work for my body. How my warm-up is very specific, knowing specifically for my shoulders and for my hips, and my flexibility in my back, and all of that is very, it's kind of like gotten so fine-tuned to where I don't really try brand new things out. I know what works for my body to keep it there. My weight, if my weight fluctuates any bit, I feel it in the air, because obviously, you know, you're holding yourself the whole time. So 5 pounds to me is going to be a little bit different than 5 pounds to, you know, a dancer dancing on the stage. So I try and keep my weight between, you know, 202 and 208, like right around there. If I'm over 208, I'm like, I can already know that I'm over 208. That's usually right around the weight that I try and stay at. With my diet, I played around a couple of things. Usually I don't eat before the shows. I'll have maybe some oatmeal and water. And that'll be my pre-show, like, meal. But I don't eat anything after, like, 4 p.m. 4 p.m. is, like, the latest time that I'll put food into my stomach.
Yeah. Even after the shows?
After the shows, of course. No, I'll go to sushi. No, that's
like, what I'm wait eating. A minute here.
No, of course. I love food. I love to cook. Like, one of my favorite things is to go to the store and just, like, grab a whole bunch of food to cook and then spend 2-3 hours afterwards.
I only eat 30 minutes a day.
Only 30 minutes a day.
That's
exactly.
It.
Exactly. No, I mean, it's... And if I wake up early enough, I'll go to breakfast. Like, if I have, you know, family to go to breakfast with, or friends... I'll go and do breakfast, but it's not like I'm going to have this major big breakfast. It's very small. I have to make sure that, you know, when you're hanging upside down and spinning for 5 minutes, it's not so much fun when you have food in your stomach. So I try and keep it.
That'd be a whole different show.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, my neck spin at the end is not something that you want to have me seeing my breakfast or my lunch.
What's the wear and tear factor though? You're getting kind of beat up every night, aren't you?
I do. The chains are very aggressive on the skin. The first month that I was putting the act together, they were really concerned for me, because they're like, "Is this how you're going to look all the time?" Because I look like I was like beaten, like in a Fight Club fight. I had bruises all over my body. The chains, they'll twist and bite you. That's how I can best describe it. Mm-hmm. And I've ripped skin open as well, just because they just have no forgiveness. Now I don't have bruises. I have under subcutaneous bruises that are there every once in a while. I'm trying to think of a better way of saying it, but just... dead nerve endings, so to say, in parts of my body that over the years just I don't have feeling of pain in that area from being on the chains, being wrapped, and being gripped on. But yeah, they are painful. They still are painful, and they are cold. So that's one thing, like, if it's like a cold day.
We need
and, like,
a chain look, fluffer.
Exactly.
We need somebody
about
to get
that.
In there and
that.
Breathe, like, on the chains.
Yeah, when they're and because they're metal always has its own different, like, in the I can tell if it's humid. I know if it's humid because they're a lot more tacky and they're sticky. I don't even have to go outside and tell you it's humid.
Yeah.
I can tell by my chains. If it's cold, I know that they've been blowing the AC on them forever, and I'm like,
thanks,
guys. I'm wearing a G-string, guys. That's all I've got covering my whole body.
Thanks very much. What's it like being a part of the Cirque family? Because, you know, I'm a big fan of this organization. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, it's dropping the Canadian words again. We're proud of it. You are so highly regarded in the Cirque family. You know, as a fan and fellow entertainer, I, you know, see you as probably one of the best in the business within that Cirque family. So what is that like for you to know that, you know, 18-year-old leaving UNLV goes to Chippendales, essentially bust your ass. You wrote your own ticket, which I love. You know, I'm a big fan of people who write their own ticket, that whole Sylvester Stallone story, you know. And you said, hey, this is what I want to do. And the company obviously had the wherewithal to recognize your ability and say, hey, let's give this kid a shot. And here you are a decade into it. Mm-hmm. What's that like? Because that's got to be pretty remarkable for you to sit back and open a bottle of wine and go, yeah, this is pretty badass.
It's sometimes I forget how I got to where I am now. When I first started, obviously, I didn't think that I was getting a phone call from Cirque du Soleil. So I thought it was a joke. Yeah. I didn't think I was ready. I didn't think I was prepared yet. But they knew I was. And by putting my act together and being in a company that gave me so much support and backing was probably the most, I'm more grateful for that than having my own act in the show, if that makes sense. Like, I'm more grateful to have been given so many opportunities over the past 10 years that they've given me, because I've not only done my act, but I also back up MC the show as well. And again, in a family of performers, that a lot of them, they're the fifth generation, sixth generation, to see this, you know, 23-year-old kid come in and born and raised in Las Vegas, what? Like, a Vegas native is now going to be, you know, in a Cirque du Soleil show, acrobat, and he was a Chippendale. So there was a couple people that were a little bit skeptical of, like, me and what I was able to produce. But once I got on stage, it showed. And I think that was just, there's some performers that just, when you have it inside you, you've got that performance inside you. And I love being on stage and performing. And over the past couple of years, like, the kindness and the respect and just the family that Cirque is, it's incredible. I could not ask to be a part of a different company. I think that they are an incredible company. They take care of you. And if you respect them, they respect you. And it's back and forth. It's equal respect. When they put the billboard up of me on the marquee in front of the New York, our publicist at the time was like, hey, I got a little exciting thing for you to do tonight. When you're at Tom's Urban, just look up towards the marquee. So that night I did. I was blown away. I had no idea that I would ever, one, be on a marquee ever. So driving down into the strip is sometimes, I look up and I'm like, that's me. And then sometimes I'm like, that's a different me. Like, there's me that's outside, and then there's the me that's on stage when I drop in and I do my act. But I'm so blessed and so grateful for the whole journey and the opportunities that Cirque actually gave me to be the best that I can be on that stage.
All right, it is time for the Vegas You Need, where we recommend incredible Vegas experiences for you to experience. And actually, Brandon, I think that you are a great Vegas You Need person, because I was thinking, since you are a native and you ostensibly know everything about Las Vegas, and so many of your colleagues in Cirque shows are from lands far away.
Yeah.
Do they just come to town and immediately ask you, what they should do, where they should go eat? Are you the, like, cirque concierge?
Not really, but I mean, I do get asked quite a bit, like, where should I go to get this or that? Vegas is always big. Like, it's booming all the time. It's growing so much. Like, even from when I was 18 and experiencing the Strip for the first time, like, Vegas is massive from the north to the east, to the west, all around. Like, I'm still finding new places and new things. So, of course, when I find something that I love, I try and talk about it. And, of course, there's certain places that, you know, if you need this, that's the place to go. Then you go over here or there. So, yeah, there are definitely some good recommendations that I have for a lot of people that come into town for the first time or are in the show for the first time, even when it comes to, like, hey, where should I live, you know, in Vegas, especially if you're working on the Strip. There's, you know, you might not want to live in North Las Vegas if you're working on the Strip, because it's going to take you way too long to get into town.
So what do you got for us today? What's your pick?
So I love food, and I was on tour. I was on the Michael Jackson Immortal World Tour for Cirque, and my love for Asian food, like, grew so much because we were in so many countries over there. And I found this restaurant called Soyo, and it's a Korean barbecue. And it's small, probably has maybe 5 booths and, like, 10 to 12 tables. It's pretty small. So, and it's amazing. The soju, they've got, like, 5 different flavors of soju. And you think it's, you know, sweet and not much alcohol, but it kicks you. And the food is amazing. They've got really, really good dishes. Really good dishes.
So this is definitely not a pre-show meal place.
Definitely not a pre-show
meal. But it sounds like a post-show
meal. Oh, it is a post-show meal, sometimes once a week, sometimes twice a week.
Nice. Yeah, I think that place is open really late also.
They're open until 2, I believe.
Yeah, which is pretty good out in the neighborhood. That's pretty late.
Yep. Yeah, because it's right there up on Rainbow.
What is it, Rainbow End?
Warm
Springs?
Yeah.
Spring Mountain?
So it's Soyo. It's south of the Beltway, definitely.
Yeah, okay.
Going. Mark, what is your pick this time around for the Vegas you need?
I'm going to go, since you picked a restaurant, I'm going to pick an event. And it's First Friday. We haven't talked about First Friday on the show. I know we'll probably have some guests from First Friday eventually. But, you know, the Arts District, Las Vegas, a little bit of everything. Art, food, atmosphere, entertainment. And it happens on the first Friday of every month. So, you know, it's one of those things that I think as a local Vegas, even people visiting, it's something to experience because it is primarily driven by our local community. And it's awesome. You know, it's different every time. You see the regulars there as well, but I think it, as a goofy entertainer guy in town, it sort of feels like home when you're walking around. It gives you a little bit of that New York feel, you know, like a festival opened up in New York City, and you're like, oh, I remember living in the city for 10 years, and you turn a corner in Manhattan, and you're like, oh, shit, street festival, and you have to go down it, you know, and that sort of has that feel, and it's just reassuring to see how many amazing, creative people call Las Vegas home, and that's what I love. You know, I love that. I love our entertainment community. I love our creatives that live here, whether you're an artist, actor, it doesn't matter. And it just feels like home. So, the first Friday.
That's a good place to eat, too, man. That's Food Truck Central.
Yeah, Food Truck Central, yeah.
Oh, the food trucks here in Vegas are so good.
So good. So good.
I am going to recommend a show this time around, but it's a show that everybody knows and probably have already seen. Maybe. I don't know. I just saw it for the first time, and I thought it was great. And it's Carrot Top at the Luxor. Carrot Top. Carrot Top. You would not think of... You know, Carrot Top has been... He's been doing his show there for like 13 years now, I think. Yeah. And he's, you know, he's the butt of people's jokes a lot of time. Doesn't necessarily get a lot of respect just as a comedian. He's the quote-unquote prop comic guy. But, like, I don't think there's a show that's going to give you more serious, like, laughs per minute than this guy. He just, it never stops. It's not all prop stuff. He's really, really quick and a lot edgier than I thought it was going to be, a lot darker than I thought it was going to be. It was a really interesting show. And super summer bonus, the coldest GD theater I've ever been in my life.
Yeah, it's cold
enough. So if you have had a long, hot Vegas day and you need to chill out and have some fun.
I think that's for fantasy, because doesn't he share the room with fantasy? God, it's so cold. Cold for the ladies.
Pew, pew.
But back to Carrot Top, he is probably one of the nicest guys I've ever met. When I first moved to Vegas and we opened Rock of Ages, the first celebrity to come to our show and reach out personally and come backstage and say hello was Carrot Top, and we've remained close ever since. So that's great that he used his show, because I love the guy. I always see him, you know, or sushi in Summerlin. I walk in and there he is. It's just an awesome, down-to-earth guy. And again, wrote his own ticket. You know, and I'm always attracted to that entertainer who just, this is what I do. You either like it or you don't, but I'm not going to change what I do. I do what I do. And 13 years and, yeah.
He's an institution.
Yeah.
He's a great. I personally have not seen the show yet. Because
let's go.
Yeah. I've known him as well for a very long time, like, personally. He's but, you know, when you work in a show, sometimes you don't get to go and see all the shows at night.
Anybody who wants to go see Carrot Top, let me know.
We're going.
We'll get a big group together.
Can we just stay in our seats for the fantasy show, too?
Might as well.
Don't tell my wife.
Many, many thanks again, Brandon, for being here with Thank us you. Today. Everybody go see Zumanity, which is, like we said, as uplifting and soulful and funny as it is provocative or steamy or... some other good words that are not sexy.
Hot. It's just hot. And it's in a great, you know, I love what's going on. We talked about it before we started recording. That whole area of New York and the Plaza, and it's just an awesome night out. There's so much energy over there, and it's great.
So much to do in that area.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Zumanity is on Friday through Tuesday at 7 and 9:30 at New York, New York. Monday's Dark returns here to the space on July 9th, raising money for Cure for the Kids Foundation. Me and Mark will be there. You should be here too. Go get your tickets right now at mondaysdark.com. Mark, what else is going on?
John Lloyd Young coming up in the fall, September. But we have a great weekend in July. Brother Noland, he's a Hawaiian legend, coming out and doing a concert. If you've ever been to Hawaii, everybody who opens their mouth talks about Brother Noland, so I'm honored that he's coming to Vegas to play the space for the first time. Who else we got? I don't know. Just go to thespacelv.com. There's so much fun stuff coming up. Haven't announced it officially, but we can announce it on your show, Brock, because I love it. Shoshana Bean. We just locked her down for the first time. She is coming back to Vegas. You know her as a Broadway star in Wicked. She was also the front of Peep Show when it was here for a little while, and I am so thrilled to have Shoshana coming for two nights in October. It's just we're cruising here at the space, and to do shows like this, and you know, to have stars like Brennan sit in here with us, it's awesome. So that's why we did the space, why we built it. Support it. Come on, check it out.
Thank you, sir. You can catch every episode of All the Vegas at lasvegasweekly.com, or just keep it simple, allthevegas.com, as well as on iTunes and YouTube. You can find a lot more words written by me, such as my recent interviews with the amazing Janelle Monáe. I interviewed Janelle Monáe the other day.
I'm a big fan, dude.
Oh, my God. And comedian George Wallace. Hilarious.
Is he coming back?
Yep, he's coming to the Westgate. Read that stuff at lasvegassun.com and lasvegasmagazine.com. Thank you for listening. Drive carefully. Come back soon.